One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
We're still fighting for this title. And he's got to go to Middleburg and get something. And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them.
Yes, everyone, what's going on? My name is Stephen Allison. Today we are joined by Chris Casper on the Warm Down. Chris is the current sporting director at Salford City and also one of the members of the famous, I think it's fair to say famous, isn't it? Class of 92, FA Youth Cup winning Manchester United side. Before we get into that, we are brought to you guys by The Athletic, as usual. And if you'd like to get 50% off your yearly membership and a month's free trial, then hit the description. And I'll give you the link a little bit later on, but let's get into it. Chris, thank you for joining me.
No problem, looking forward to it.
Right then, so can you explain a little bit about what your role is to begin with, and then we'll talk about the United Days a little bit later on.
Yeah, my role basically encompasses all football aspects of the club. So from recruitment of first team players, first team manager, staff, the development of the academy, and basically making sure that the footballing philosophy of the club, that we've actually stated that we... That we've identified is basically kept to. But obviously on the other side of things, from a strategic side of things and a business side of things, has to be, that the club has to be run properly as well from an economic and business perspective. So it's making sure that there's a connection between the football inside and the way that the football club is actually run. And obviously that comes working with the owners, working with the chairman. That's the role basically, and the football philosophy of the club is the most important thing as far as I'm concerned, and making sure that is it's important that it's stated, it's important that it's recognised, and we have to make sure that every person that comes into the club, every player that comes into the club understands what Salford City is about, and that's what, the role is all about.
So you guys have had some phenomenal success at the moment, and I believe the aim is to go a lot higher than where you guys currently are at the moment. In terms of that footballing philosophy, where's that coming from? Is that coming from yourself partially? Is that coming entirely from the owners? What's the sort of makeup of the footballing philosophy? Is it like an agreed upon sort of thing between the both parties?
Yeah, it's, obviously with our background and obviously the owner's background coming through the Man United system.
You may have heard about a couple of them.
Yeah,
They did all right, didn't they?
Yeah, they did very well. Absolutely, yeah. And it was successful for them and obviously for the manager and the football club. And the values and standards that were set at Manchester United, there's no reason why that shouldn't be replicated at any other club, any other business, any other way of life, and that's what we're looking to achieve. And look, Man United had some world-class players, and to be able to play in a team like that and the way that they played would be absolutely fantastic. But it began with the values and the behaviours and the characteristics of the players that were in the club, and it was led by the manager. And I think if you get those fundamentals and basics in place, then anything can be achievable. So that's what we try and replicate first and foremost from Manchester United and the experiences that we had coming through that club. So the playing philosophy and the playing style, we would like to be able to replicate that. It's not always going to be possible because... the players that we're trying to recruit are not always available that you'd like to. So sometimes it has to be a compromise a little bit. But the way that we go about the game, the way that we play the game on the front foot, attacking, it will be very similar. Or hopefully we're trying to, be very similar to what we were brought up in, and obviously the success that the lads had at United.
So that's something that you guys have sat around in a meeting and gone, it almost seems like you all have this sort of idea that's how football should be played independently, and I think of all sort of like with a nod and a wink sort of agreed that this is how they should be played, but it's not sort of been like, I think we should play this way. It's not...
No, no, there's a lot of thought went into it, a lot of meetings. We have a club philosophy document that is stated in. Okay. So, you know, not saying if anything does veer away from that, but, you know, we're very clear on the way that we want to play and the way that we go about playing and the way that we attack games and approach games. And like I say, it's stated in this document. So, you know, it's about keeping things on track and... the way that we believe the game should be played, but also as well, like I say, the approach and the mentality that goes with that as well.
When you come to, you mentioned recruiting the right kind of player and stuff like that. As sporting director, what's your specific role in the recruitment and the long-term planning of a football team? Because I think Manchester United fans at the moment, we look at the money that we've spent as a football team, and it does feel like it's been a little bit mismanaged, perhaps because we've had three different managers, four different managers with different footballing philosophies. Is a director of football a sort of custodian of making sure that, one, the managers that are recruited to the same sort of hymn sheet, and then the players would work across maybe multiple managers? Is that something yourself's involved
with? Yeah, 100%. I think it's got to start somewhere, the sporting director's role. You know, when they're brought into a club, invariably there'll always be a manager in charge at that moment in time. But as the time progresses, then, you know, if the manager does change, then the first thing the sporting director has to do is identify the right manager that is going to deliver the football philosophy of the club. And that's absolutely critical, that, you know, and that's what we've done, obviously, with Graham. And I think it's, like I say, it's important that philosophy is identified and is clear. The vision of the club is clear, and what you want to achieve, etc. And then within that, the role of the sporting director is to work with the manager and the head of recruitment and the scouts to identify how the club is going to move forward with regards to player targets. We try and keep the manager out of the process till later on in the process, basically, because part of the sporting director's role is to take all that kind of, not so much nonsense, but that work away from him, where he's left finally with three or four choices, and these will fit the club philosophy and the playing philosophy that we've actually brought you into to be able to deliver. So instead of him, you know, sifting through loads of players and speaking to agents and whatever, that's my job, and that's our job, as, you know, from the recruitment aspect. And then we say, right, okay, those are the three or four players. And then it's down to the manager to work, you know, to speak with us and seeing which of those players would fit the bill. But that process, we've got player profiles that we identify for each position. The players obviously have to fit into that profile. But also as well, we look at the other side of it, not from a technical and tactical, but also character side and motivational side.
How are you getting that at League Two level? How are you getting that sort of information?
You've got to speak to players or ex-manager they've worked with, or ex-players, or... Social media is a good way of looking at it, you know, because if a player's coming out and saying all kinds of nonsense on social media, chances are he's not the right character. Whereas if they are the disciplined, they've got a character about them, no problem with players using social media and all the rest of it, but it has to be done in the right way. And
yeah, if they're losing and going, manager's a dick, yeah, it's probably not a good fit.
I don't think so. I don't think Graham's going to be right happy with me, but, you know.
He's
a striker. Yeah, producing a player like that. So there's lots of things, lots of due diligence that we go through before we actually present the players to the manager.
So you basically just do all of the legwork and then you present him... How is that delivered to a manager? Is it just like a conversation over a brew? Right, I've got four centre-halves here that I think you should look at. What's your preference? Has he got the final nod on who he signs or who you'd then try and sign?
Yeah, I think he has to. I think, you know, if the manager's given players that he doesn't want or he doesn't rate, then... you know, it's not going to work because he's not going to want them, he's not going to fancy them and all the rest of it. So I think it's a formal meeting throughout the season. It might be an informal conversation. We speak regularly, myself and Graham meet every Monday and Thursday, you know, without question as well, and going through all different parts of performance, and obviously recruitment's one of those things. Now we're in the league, it's a little bit different because we're governed by the transfer window. But like I said, that will be, you know, if we are looking for a centre forward, and right, okay, these are the you know, we agree what we're looking for. We go away, let's say, from the recruitment aspect of things, and then we bring back and present what we've found. And then, you know, we have a conversation about it. Why would he be the right player? Why would this one be? Why would that one not might not be right? But etc. So we give them as many, not so much many options as possible, but as good options as possible. That hopefully, like I say, and we've just made over the last 3 weeks, we've just brought four new players in, so hopefully that's going to bolster the team as well.
How far do you reckon you can dip down and find good enough quality to take Salford to like League One level, do you reckon? Conference is obviously a very competitive league. Conference North, pretty competitive. Do you reckon you can get much quality outside of that still?
Yeah, I think so. We have scouts in all those leagues, so our non-league scout is kind of an expert in those leagues. So anybody that gets flagged up, either, you know, we try and get them watched as much as possible, get reports on them. Sometimes we'll get them in to train with us, and so we have a look, see if they're like us, see if if we like them, obviously. There are some real good young players out there. We didn't actually go that far for our latest one, a lad called Brandon Asante, who's done really well for us. But Brandon had been released as a 20-year-old from MK Dons. He trialled at one or two places, but when he came in with us, he came in as a working with the development squad to begin with, but soon progressed on to the first team. Now he's a regular first team player.
We can cut this out if you don't want to answer this, but I'll ask you this anyway. I saw Tyrell Warren got picked up by you guys, and he's been sent out on loan to Radcliffe Borough, where I think he won Player of the Month last year.
Last month.
How far is he off the standard? Because I really rated him when he was coming through the United's Academy.
Yeah he's rated highly, to be fair. He's gone to Radcliffe because he needed games, because the development squad has no regular games programme. They've played some really good games, but we felt that Tyrell needed that challenge, that next challenge of playing competitive games. And Radcliffe have given him that. And obviously we know John as well from our time. I know John from my time at United, John Macken, who's the manager there. So it's been a really good fit for Tyrell. And he's gone in there, like I say, I think they went on a really good run when he went in there. He won Player of the Month, like you say, and now he's just going to re-sign for another month. But with all respect to Radcliffe, he is capable of playing much higher than that.
Have we seen him in Salford first team anytime soon, do you reckon?
Possibly.
obviously, Sporting Director covers not just the first team, but the academy as well. Considering how all of you guys got your start and the famous Class of 92 sort of academy situation that you guys hail from, essentially, is there a desire and a pressure almost to make sure that Salford's got a top drawer academy?
It's the one of the main reasons I got brought in. So kind of like where the bit of background on the club was that Gary and Ryan were coming back from London one day and decided, or it was suggested that, you know, we needed to, or they wanted to develop an academy. Given the same opportunities that we got in Salford, obviously with United. So Salford City was identified that it's all right having an academy, and there's lots of academies around, but come to 18, there's no first team for them to play in, and they go on the different ways. So I say that's where the club kind of came from, really, that the academy came a little bit before the club, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Or that was the kernel of the idea, so to speak, that, you know, having an academy where players could then go into a first team was the ideal scenario. So to get the opportunities that we got at United, you know, and then end up in a first team is obviously the ambition of the club. And to have a real good academy, and we've set that up just over 2 years ago now, and we had a league debut. Alex Doyle, who's a Salford lad, he made his league debut earlier on in the season, so it's already paying for, you know, paying its, you know, not as much paying its way, but it's already bearing fruit, so to speak, I should say. And to carry on developing the academy is going to be big for us, really important for us, because, like I say, we've all got an affinity to an academy system, because it gives us all a chance, and that's what we want to give to the young people of Salford. And they might not be from Salford, they might be from further afield, but to give the young people an opportunity to develop in an academy and then go on to play in a first team. The thing is, when we're recruiting players for the academy, it's kind of like, right, well, you've got to have an idea. You have to think that they are going to be good enough to play in your first team if they carry on developing and, you know, they mature and physically mature and all the rest of it. But with the first team, when we started the academy 2 years ago when we were in Conference North, it's now changed. We've got to develop players that are good enough to play in League Two now.
Yeah, or possibly project into beyond one championship.
Yeah, so, but the academy guys, Jamie Russell's the head of the academy, has done a fantastic job already with the, you know, with the academy and the development of players already. And we've just signed 10 under-16s who will be our first years next year, and we've got a real high hope for them because we don't have a 9s to 16s at the minute with what you call a Category 4 club. And what we've done is we've recruited lads that have just not been quite good enough in the past for Category 3 clubs. Now we've had Category 2s and Category 1s who have just not...
Like Premier League level.
Yeah, just not been quite good enough for them, but we've managed to attract them and sign them, which, like I say, the lads are really excited by for the future.
The attrition rate at Premier League clubs is frightening, isn't it? It's less than 1% of those that are there at, what, 15 even, are going to make a first-team debut somewhere. So there's a lot of players that can potentially wash out of that top flight that, like yourselves, if you've got a good programme, can pick up.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when I was at Bury, we did kind of the same thing, although that was a 9s to 18s programme. But your likes of your David Nugents, your Simon Whaley's, your Nicky Adams, who we played against Saturday, they were all released as an under 16 from a Man United or, you know, Bolton and Crewe, which are good academies. Mm-hmm. We managed to pick them up from those clubs and they went on to have great careers as well. So very rarely at that level, if you got a player at nines, from under nine all the way through to under 18, be very, very rare, because chances are if they are a decent player, they'll get snapped up by a Category 1 club at 12, 13, 14 and they are allowed to leave now through the compensation system. There's nothing
you can do to prevent that, is there? If someone's 12 or 13, it's just like United came in and that's that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I worked for the Premier League for 6.5 years and in that time we delivered the ECPP, the Elite Player Performance Plan, and within that plan there was a clear compensation system that allowed players to move in and around the system. So it kind of works for probably the bigger clubs, but for the smaller clubs, they are at risk of losing the players. Although they do get compensated for it, but you know, I'm sure they'd like to keep hold of the better players for their own first team.
Like the satisfaction now, you know, we as United fans also are watching, obviously, the owners come through and the likes of Mason Greenwood, Brandon Williams coming through now. Mm. There's something that's inexplicable about the pride that you see in watching a young player that you know has been at the club since he was 8, you know, start, and I've been a supporter as well, start bagging goals for the first team. And I'm sure, like, the pride that you've got with a young lad that's just made his debut, that coming through the system now, if you can replicate that, you know, 15, 20 times over the next decade or so, there's a real pride in everybody around that, isn't there? It's hard to explain, isn't it, almost, like, why that feels better than buying somebody in?
Yeah, like I say, I think it's the fans give you... The fans will give that player more time than a player that's actually brought in, because he's one of their own, basically. They'll accept a few mistakes from them, they'll give them more time, and they genuinely want that player, like I say, because he's homegrown and he's been part of that club for such a long time. There's that connection with that player. So I think that's the real feeling that you get when you know, and as a manager, there's nothing better than giving a young player his debut. Like I say, at Bury, giving Nicky and David Buchanan and all these players their chance. And that was it kind of came through, not so much opportunity, but, you know, lack of funds, basically. And they were given an opportunity because of the financial state of the club. But you always knew that they wouldn't let you down. That's one thing a young player playing for their own club will never, ever do. And, you know, they'll run through an absolute brick wall. They'll give you everything that they've got. And like I said, they will make the odd mistake, but you'll forgive that, because you can, especially when you're seeing the development of that player and who hopefully go on to achieve things with that club, captain the club, possibly move on as well. And, you know, that's what happens. But knowing that you've played a part in the development of that player is really rewarding as a coach and a manager.
Right. Before you all start tweeting, I know Salford spend, and I think you spent a bit already this month, haven't you? Is there a time coming? Certainly, if you could think going forward towards being a Premier League level football club, when you see the transfer fees of like Mbappe and Neymar and stuff like that, is there a point where you go, do you know what? If we spent a fraction of that on our own academy, try to find the best coaches in the area, all of the support networks needed, do you think academies bear more fruit for that sort of spend than one big transfer fee would? Is it just a matter of patience with that?
I just think it's the way that football is now, Steve, to be fair. You know, you're always going to get big transfers for your Mbappes and people like that. But I think the more that, you know, you can focus on the academy, it's getting that fine balance. It's getting the right experience and the right quality in your first team that you can actually add your good young players into. You know, obviously there's the Alan Hansen one where, you know, he says he never win anything with the kids and all the rest of it. But what he kind of failed to realise that the young kids were coming into a real good first team that had Peter Schmeichel, Steve Bruce, Gary Pallister, Dennis Irwin, Roy Keane, Eric Cantona. You could class Ryan as a, you know, probably one of the more senior ones at that level. You know, so it's getting that balance and getting that right balance. You can't just flood the club with young players because they need that experience alongside them to help them teach the game. But I also, and the vision of the club is to also have, like you say, with the likes of the Alex Doyles and people like that coming through, is to have that balance and that blend of young players with the experienced players.
Do you think there's the inconsistency thing that you get with young players as they're coming through, is that just something that you have to live with to get young players through to that experienced pro sort of level? And do you think it's there with every young player? Or do you think there's, you know, the occasional special case which is just fantastic out of the box?
No, I think it happens with everybody, every young player. Even, you know, I'm sure if you spoke to Ryan coming through, you know, and Ryan was probably the only player that you could see as a, you know, is a 12, 13, 14-year-old that you knew was absolutely going to be an unbelievable player. You know, as a at the same age, David Beckham, Paul Scholes, Gary Neville, blah, blah, blah. You would never have thought they'd have gone on to have the careers that they would. But Ryan, you kind of knew he was a special player. But, you know, even in his younger days, you know, Ryan will have made mistakes. He'll have learned from the mistakes. You know, he wasn't flawless. Anybody, I'm sure, is the first to admit that. And every young player will have been the same. And it's the only way that you learn. It's how you learn, and it's that character that that you've got to develop. That it's how you deal with those mistakes, basically, and how you move on. If you don't learn from them, then you know you're not going to be a successful player and play at Manchester United. But you know, like I said, if you've got that strong mindset and that character, then you know you'll be fine. But every player will make mistakes, and young players will do that.
I've got a quote from you here which says, "We are developing," this is obviously at Salford, "developing youth players and giving young people an opportunity just like we had at United." Is that an Eric Harrison thing or is that a Sir Alex thing? It's your quote, but it definitely feels like it's almost been penned by one of those.
Yeah, no, it's my quote, and you know, that's how we were brought up with Eric. You know, he believed in us. You'd go and have your review with him every 6 or 8 weeks, you know, and you'd say, you know, keep going. And one thing that I think young coaches or coaches these days are afraid of actually mentioning the word success and win and stuff like that. And he would say to you, look, carry on doing as you're doing. You'd not be far from the first team. You've got a real chance of making the first team. So he'd give you that encouragement and that confidence. You'd come out of the meeting thinking, you know, I've got a real chance here. But Eric would know that you've got the mentality to be able to deal with that. You know, and it was all driven from the manager, but Eric was a very similar character to the manager. And to be fair, all the other coaches were, you know, Nobby and Brian Kidd and Jim Ryan. And, you know, they all had that identity of Manchester United, what it took to win, what it took to develop a player. You know, and the way that it worked and was so fluid from Sir Alex all the way through was obviously clear, and that's why it was so successful. So that quote was the way that it's been ingrained in us over the years, and you know that's how we were as young kids.
Facilities wise, the Cliff in the early 90s, does Salford have better facilities now than what was coming through at the Cliff?
Very similar, to be fair. The pitch at the Cliff wasn't great, and before we brought before Littleton Road was available, I think every, you know, that you got a quarter of the pitch for the for the youth team, quarter of the pitch for the reserves and half of the pitch for the first team, something like that.
So one football pitch for the so-called biggest club in the world in the 90s.
Yeah, I think that was maybe mid-80s or late 80s, and then Littleton Road, a couple of miles around the corner. That was a real, and it's still there to this day. I think the young kids use it in the
I've seen my sister play there for the ladies.
It's a great, always good surfaces, always, you know, good place. But again, facilities don't make players. They don't. It's about what you actually do on the pitch, off the pitch, in the gym and all the rest of it, and you know, the work that goes on, in the hard work, the hard yards. No fancy facility is going to make a player. It's not going to happen. And United won the treble out of the cliff that Carrington was being developed that year. But you know, United won the treble out of the cliff, and I think Carlos Queiroz said to Sir Alex, "How did you ever win the Champions League at this place?" And it's not about facilities. It's about the people that's actually working within the facilities and the hard work that goes on in there.
They've just United have just done a podcast where they took Robbo back. I think they did the podcast out of the first team changing room. And then they walked around in the gym, they walked around the offices and stuff like that. And it's so basic, isn't it? And I think Robbo was saying at the time, some of the older players and stuff had told him, it was like this when Busby was here. It's like, it just hasn't changed in the slightest.
Yeah, yeah. No, like I said, but it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. As long as it's efficient and it's functional, it doesn't matter. It's about the development of the character and the people within, you know, within the club and within that environment and the culture that ultimately will you know, decide and shape whether you're going to be successful or not.
Loads of stories about Eric Harrison making all your lads clean that place top to bottom. Mm. Is that something that you make your apprentices do?
Yeah, our first team clean the area that they're eating and the resting. We think that's important. It's quite funny actually when a new player comes in who's a bit of experience and all of a sudden he's on the rotor to be cleaning the room. It's like, hang on a minute. But within a week, that's the culture they want to develop. With Eric, it was a test really, more than anything, I think, to be given a role and a job and seeing if you could, you know, seeing what pride you took in that job and seeing what responsibility you took. And my job was to clean the first team showers, bath and toilet. And I'd have been distraught if he'd have turned around and said, that wasn't good enough, that's not good enough. And I never did. I never gave him the excuse to do that. And it was just having that pride of, you know, you're given a job to do. So when you get given a job to do on a Saturday in the youth team, or Sir Alex give you a job to do against whoever in the first team, then you know that that player will do everything he can not to let you down. Whereas if they're sloppy off the pitch, how are you going to trust them on the pitch? You know, so it was just building that culture up of, you're given a responsibility, you do it to the best of your ability. It's like the kids who go to, our kids go to Trafford College to do their education. Education is not for everybody. In fact, as a young player, you want to be out on the pitch. You know, you don't really want to be in a classroom. But I always say to them, that's what you're going to have to do. That's the rules. That's the league rules. Do it to the best of your ability. Mm. Not everyone's going to be a star. Not one's going to pass with flying colours. But so long as you can do it to the best of your ability, that's all that matters. Whether you get a C, whether you get a D, whatever it is, if that's your best, that's all that anybody can ask of you. And I think those are the values, and that's the standard that we're trying to instill in our, not so much our youth team players, but our first team as well. You know.
Have you read Das Reboot by Raphael Honigstein?
No.
I'll give you my copy because it's belting. If I was to say to you, what do you reckon the average footballer gets above or below average in terms of like schooling grades? My guess would have been below average. Mm. What would you have said?
Having worked in the, like I say, in the Premier League, I think now there's a real focus on the education of players. And I actually think now, I think top players are not so much better educated, but because of performance analysis and sports science, and they've got to have an understanding of that. I think players possibly have changed a little bit over the last 10, 15 years. And again, I think it comes from the clubs, and most clubs do instill in their players that they have to get and they have to maintain the schooling. And say, for example, a player in a Category 2 club or a Category 1 club, 12s to 16s, they will now come out of school for a day, sometimes 2 days a week. But it's the club's responsibility, and they'll work with the school and school that the kids are to compensate for those lessons that they're actually missing. And I think the results have have actually increased.
I've got better. The result on it was, this was talking about Schweinsteiger and Lahm and that sort of era of German football, and it was how actually their grades are well better than the average, which shocked people. It shocked me as I was reading it as well. I was like, definitely didn't expect that. Definitely thought there'd be a tapering off there.
Yeah, I think, like I say, with the schooling system as it is, and you've got classes of 30, 35, if you think about it, and the compensatory lessons, it's possibly 8, possibly 10 just in those lessons. So the kids are actually getting a far better and far more detailed education programme, and they're getting a lot more one-to-one with the teachers. So it kind of makes sense, really, the grades are improving in kids in academies.
You mentioned the Category 1, Category 2 club. You say Salford's currently Category 4 academy.
Yeah.
What's the steps you need to do to become Category 1?
There'd be a lot of steps. Firstly would be the facilities. You have to have a certain amount of facilities, certain amount of pitches, indoor area. So at least, I think it's 60 by 40 indoor area.
Was it Colchester just built a big indoor facility which levelled them up to the next level? I didn't realise that was a must requirement for teams.
Yeah, you have all the different kind of prerequisites that you have to hit. So, and then at the end of the process, so you have to submit what your training programme is, and the amount of contact hours you're actually providing to the kids. There is minimum requirements from 9 to 11, then 12 to 14, 14 to 16. Facilities, staff, and then you submit your programmes, etc. to... it's just changed now over the last year, but it used to be to an auditing company, sports auditing company called Double Pass. They would come in every 3 years, audit everything, and then grade your whereabouts, against the ideal, basically, and that would actually give you your category. So it's not just about facilities, but if you don't have certain facilities, you can't definitely move on to the next level.
When it comes to that level of youth football at the moment, obviously, I think the way the regionalised leagues work, you can play against all of the other, the big academies and stuff like that at that level. Is any sort of, I can't think of the word I'm trying to find here, when you're looking at the results of some of those games, because I know that, for example, Mason Greenwood was in a United side that lost 9-0 to City. Yeah, he's the only kid that you've seen or heard of since.
Yeah.
How much stock do you put on actual results below like 15's level?
None.
None whatsoever. It's purely the individual.
Yeah. I would imagine that United team would have been pretty young. Might have been an under 14's team. United didn't. They do care, don't get me wrong. They do care about, results, etc. And making sure that the kids aren't, getting battered week in, week out. It wouldn't be right. But
it's not the focus.
But it's no, I think it's the most important thing is, and it might have been a test for those kids. That's the difference in United. They'll expose them to a challenge. In a lot of clubs, the coaches will want to just win the game and, they beat United 9-0. So what? What would you prefer, to have an under-15s team that beat United 9-0 or a Mason Greenwood in your team that possibly could be going to the Euros next year? And that's the result. That's the end result. So actually exposing
kids... this year now.
Sorry, this year, yeah.
It's like 5 months away, isn't it?
Yeah. So exposing them to different challenges. And that's what they did brilliantly at United. So going back to what we did at United in the A-team, you'd play Liverpool away. Then you'd go and play Morecambe at home, which would be, with all respect, it'd be a bit of an easier game and you'd have a lot more of the ball. Then you got Tranmere away on a real tough pitch, load of experienced players playing against you. So you'd call it what they used to call extend and consolidate. So you'd really stretch you in some games and then you'd bring you back down and then you'd have an easier game where you're expected to win and you'd have a lot more of the ball. So instead of it just being 18s, you'd play against, we played against a lot of good players on the cliff. Man City brought a team once with, Brightwell and Morge and AD Mike and Lomas and Flitcroft and people like that. And it was a real battle, but
it's a behind closed doors game?
No, it was an A-team game. Okay. So the A-team in those days was open age. So in one game, we had coming back from injury, Brian Robson, Paul Parker and Mickey Phelan all played for us. So for us, it was great that we were playing alongside those players, and it was like on-field coaching, really. And, you know, like I said, to gain from those kind of experiences. Whereas now, kids in the under-18s will play against other kids from under-18s. They've probably been playing. If they've been in the same system for the last 6 years, they'll have played against them for 6 years. So there needs to be that spike in the games programme. And possibly this is where, you know, the 23s, and it gets a lot of criticism. I'm not going to criticise it, but I think that's where people do criticise it. That
I would. I was literally just about to say to you then, is that where the beigeness of 23s football
possibly
comes in?
Yeah, but it's difficult because, again, you don't want to keep on harping back to the old days, but it did work. That if you didn't play for Man United's first team on a Saturday, so Dion Dublin might, he might not. Neil Webb, Lee Sharp, Mickey Phelan, Paul Parker, whoever didn't play on a Saturday, he played in the reserves. It was no questions asked. It didn't make a difference whether it was a home against Everton or away at Leicester or Wolves or wherever that was. But you'd also be playing against, I remember playing against Alan Shearer, Steve Bull, Ian Ormondroyd, who was 6'5", and I'm 17. I'm like, how am I going to handle this? You know, in front of 13,000 at Leicester, you know, in a reserve game. And it was like, and Eric played for us against against Leeds when he was coming back from either an injury or one of his suspensions and that. So I think it was his suspension. He was coming towards the end of it, and or he'd just gone through it and that. And so he needed a game to come. It's 22,000 Old Trafford against Leeds. It was just, you know, it's a challenge. And those experiences are what the young players need now. There's, you know, and we, again, at Salford City, we try and replicate that. So the 18s are in a league, but also as well we try and play the non-league teams, the men's teams, that are going to be a lot more physical. It's going to be a lot more of a different challenge, and then we might play a team that's a bit easier as well, that you've got a bit more of the ball and a bit more control. So that's it. Again, looking back on our experience, that extend and consolidate was what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, you just answered the question I was going to have, which is how are you going to try and implement that? Because I've heard so many people talk about the benefits of playing against, you know, you go to Maine, a Marine, and just play against blokes as 16 and 17 year olds. And there's a couple of United Academy lads that I spoke to after they played in the much criticised Leasing.com trophy, and they said, I've never felt deader after a game. Mm. Like the recovery took me way more because it was harder. And I think, well, there's malpractice here by somebody. If this is what the lads are saying, that they're not ready then. If playing 23's football and they play one match in the Leasing.com trophy means that they're coming off going, that was hard, then they're not prepared for this. So how do you make sure that you're 21s, 18s, 16s are getting exposed to that level of hardship, that getting exposed to that level of physicality? And let's be honest, if you're in League 2, Championship, League 1, or even a conference. Conferences, I think people diss the conference, but it's because it's not seen as the professional league. But I mean, what's your experience? Would you say there's much difference between conference and League 2?
Yeah, I do actually, yeah. I think quality-wise is the big difference. A lot of League Two sides, you make a mistake and you're getting punished. But physically wise, and you know, the way that the game's played, there's probably the top half of the conference could probably survive in the bottom half of the league. But it's just that extra bit of quality, really. That, you know, with all respect to the lads in the conference, and there's some really good players in there. You know, there is that little bit of difference. But whether you know, at United, whether you're sending a player to a conference team or a League Two team, it's still the same challenges. You're still going to get the same challenges. Physically, it's going to be tough. The game's going to be played at 100 miles an hour. There's an expectancy to win, you know. And again, you know, some problems with sometimes with the academies is, you know, you don't always have to state that, you know, we want to win the game. But any kid knows, no matter what age you play, no matter what type of game you play, kids always want to win. That's what you play the game for. Mm. Don't play just for the coach to turn around and say, oh, don't matter about winning, it's, you know, it's about performance. Yeah, it is, but don't tell the kid that it's not about winning, because you play a game in the playground when you were a kid. Everybody knew the score, you know? You play a game on a Sunday in an academy. All right, the results aren't broadcast or anything like that and published. But kids know the score. So don't stop them from having that enjoyment of winning. Because all the top players, all the elite players, whatever they do, they want to win at it. And don't take that away from them, that opportunity. Mm. It's not a bad word, isn't winning?
No, I'm not sure I agree with the not publishing of results for younger players either. Maybe at academies I get it to a certain extent because there's probably more pressure at those. But you know, the typical Saturday, Sunday league level, you know, under 9s, under 10s. My son's team had gone through a period of, this is probably when he was 8, I'm going to say. They hadn't won for 4 or 5 weeks and then they won. And the way they celebrated the win, I remember thinking to myself, like, they're getting a bit giddy, aren't they? And then I was like, oh, they haven't won, actually, for a few weeks.
Yeah.
So this is what it means to them. And I was like, what's the point in not publishing results? I don't understand who they're trying to protect out of this. These kids know.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially in Manchester, the level of competitive football is outrageous, isn't it? Like, some of the higher echelon Premier League level, you know, under 11s, under 12s, under 13s, the football is absolutely outrageous. And there's as many scouts there as there is parents at most of the games as well.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really agree with the not telling people.
Mm. Yeah, like I say, it's don't take that enjoyment away from the kids. And it's not going to be all about winning, but let them win. Let them win it. You know, there's nothing wrong with that.
And celebrate it if you do.
Yeah. And if you lose, losing is part of the game. And you've got to learn to deal with that. And some kids will, you know, you call it the grieving process, I suppose. Some kids after a game, they're not bothered. They just get on and look forward to the next game. For some kids, it actually matters to them. They think, oh, I've lost. You know, so long as there's no other outside influence as to why they're actually feeling like that, you know, the parents or the coach or whatever. If it's actually just them that, you know, I've lost, I don't like losing. Nothing wrong with that either.
Who sulked the most out of class of 92 when you lose?
To be fair, we all took it badly. None of us like losing. But it was one of them where you couldn't get down with it. You couldn't be down for too long because if you took your eye off the ball, then the next game's coming. You've got to prepare for the next game. So, I mean, in that youth team, myself and Gary played centre half together, and we did moan like mad at each other. Not just each other, everybody else. We were bad, like, to be fair. So looking back, some of the things that we used to say to the players, they give the ball away sloppily, or you know, they didn't have the right attitude to keeping the ball, or you know, I say they were sloppy or something like that. They knew about it.
Right, Chris, thank you very much. This has been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for joining us. This is brought to you guys by The Athletic. As I said, I'll give you the link again at the end. It's theathletic.co.uk/Howson. Link will be in the description if you're not bothered typing it out and you just want to click something. You can get 50% off your yearly subscription and a month's free trial if you want to check it out. And transfer season, there's definitely stuff worth checking out on there at the moment. Again, thank you again, Chris.
Pleasure.
And I'll see you guys in the next one. Laters.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.